Hello and welcome to this episode of From the Internet. Today I'm talking to, comedian, musical comedian, radio host, DJ, TV presenter, Hugh Joseph. Now, Hugh and I both worked for Southern Cross Austereo at the same time. He was doing a brekkie show over East while I was up in Queensland and then WA. But about a year ago, he said, nah, I'm going to change it up a little bit. I'm going to move to the UK and just have a crack at doing music and radio and just see what happens. Bloody brave move. And he's absolutely killing it, and he makes me jealous because he pops up in my newsfeed on Facey, and I go, God damn, it looks like he's having such a good time over there. He tells us all about what he's up to, so I'll let him explain that. This is Hugh Joseph. My name's Ryan John, and thanks for listening to my podcast called From the Internet. Welcome to the first ever international guest of this From the Internet podcast, Hugh Joseph. Thanks for joining me, bro.
Hey, body massage. Yeah. Hey, mate, how are you?
I'm very well. Thank you so much for joining me. As you and I only know, but now everyone else, meeting each other at the same time zone has been a little bit tricky, but we've finally got here.
It always has. I have so much problems with people, you know, and they get really angry, and I was just trying to Skype you, and it's like, piss off, mum. it can be really, really tricky. Trying to get it, which is weird because you don't think it would be because it's only like a 10-hour difference, say, from Melbourne to London. But it's you just miss that little window, and then it's gone.
Yeah,
and then you got to wait. Who knows how long? So yes, anyway, it is very nice to chat to you, Mr. Man. It's been a while.
Yeah, I was sort of curious about how I would like introduce you to the podcast because I didn't know whether to say DJ or musician or comedian or radio host. So maybe I'll just leave that for you. And like, how do you go about introducing yourself if someone says, oh, what do you do for a living? Because it's not an easy answer, I wouldn't have thought.
It's really, really not actually. Because, and actually, even with one of the radio shows I do here, which I'm just about to start a new one. And the boss was like, she's like, okay, I need like a new little sort of bio for the show sort of thing. And she was like, what do we call you? What do we say? Because the other guy I do the show with is, he's an actor and a stand-up comedian and a rapper. So she was like, okay, I'm just going to put you're both comedians. And I was like, yeah, I don't know. I don't really bill myself as that. If anything, I probably would say radio, musical comedy, and a little bit of TV stuff.
Yeah.
That's how it's at.
And is that just because the way it's working for you at the moment, or that's what you prefer, or that's what you want it to be, or...?
I just probably think it's most succinct, really, with what I do. Like, because it is a little bit tricky, because obviously I do love like DJing in clubs, and I do love radio, and I love doing the bits of TV stuff, and I love the musical comedy. So I kind of feel like they're all sort of equal quarter parts of my life.
Yeah. Now, so what sort of happened first? Like, I'm guessing most people who are musical, I always just assume that they started playing instruments and playing around when they were younger. Is that the same for you, or what sort of came first with all the bits and pieces you do?
Well, I started swearing really, really young. I think I was about 3 when I said fuck. So my parents thought if we put a guitar in his hand and when he swears, people would just think it's funny songs.
Yeah. Very smart parenting. There's parenting 101.
Yeah, pretty much, man. No, I was playing guitar from a really young age because of a musical family. And, and then I can't really remember the process, but I was doing some live stuff, and then all of a sudden, oh, that's right, I was at a party once with a few people, and I started playing a song that was just a bit stupid, and everyone really liked it, so I just kind of, I think I sort of sat quiet for a few months and turned around, and I was like, hey, I've got heaps of songs, and they're like, oh, all right, that was quick. So then I put a band together, and it just sort of went from there, I guess.
And was that?
I'm still kind of figuring my way through it, you know what I mean? It's always a learning process, and but it's fun.
Yeah, cool. And was that the same band? Like, I know a lot of musos go from band to band as they grow up and meet different people. Did you always work with the same guys, or how that all work for you? Because I know sometimes it's tricky to try and get a bunch of different people to concentrate on one thing at one time.
Definitely. Really is definitely always challenging, especially what I do, because I've had quite a few session players over the years. But initially it was kind of friends, and then it slowly went from friends to, piecing together sort of serious musicians. So that maybe my current band in Melbourne at the moment, there's the one guy, bass player, who's been like a really big musical director kind of support role for me. And so I still play with him as I have for 5 or 6 years. And then the other two dudes is like a session drummer who's actually, he's done lots of stuff. He was Pete Murray's drummer for a long time. And then another guy who plays keys, and he plays with a bunch of different bands. And they're all very, very good. I've got no training as a musician, so everything I've learned is by ear, even though I've been playing since I was about 5 or 6. So it's very important for me to have people that go, hey, what key is that in? And I go, house key, car key, key to padlock.
Whatever you think it sounded like, it was probably that. When we, like, I guess, sort of met each other, like a lot of the other people on this podcast, is that with Southern Cross Austereo, a lot of the guys that do breakfast kind of chat to each other and help each other out because it can be a bit lonely in the regionals sometimes. But I think out of all the people who sort of go, yeah, I've done this radio thing, I'm going to try something else, you've gone the furthest out of all of them, like geographically, because you just went one day, oh, I think I'm going to go to London. Or tell me about that, because I'm guessing it's not an easy decision to just go, oh, maybe I'll move to London. Surely it's something that you think about over a few years and you got to line some stuff up, or how does that actually come about?
Absolutely, man. And it did, it's a really good question, because it took me a lot of reflection to figure that out as well. But essentially what happened is I was, as you fully well know yourself, when you get a job, you know, obviously say working in a regional or provincial or whatever, getting those roles is, you know, it's the start of where you want to go ultimately in a big company like SCA. But even to get a job like that can be really hard and can take a long time to even get to that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
So I felt very, very secure in my position with the company that I was not going anywhere at all, because I didn't want to waste that opportunity. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And I really loved it. You know what I mean? So it's different if you move because everything's shit, but everything for me was actually going really well.
Yeah.
So that was the hardest thing. So, but it came about when I did the comedy festival, not this year, but the year before. And I made a really good friend there, a comedian called Doc Brown, who was he was one of the international headliners from the UK for that year.
Yeah, yeah.
And me got really, really well and da-da-da-da-da. And he kind of sparked it. He was like, because he came on my show as well, and I was doing it with Stacey in Gippsland.
Yep.
And he was like, man, I kind of think you should really investigate the UK. And I had already been over there to do gigs a couple times before over the last 5 years. And I was like, yeah, I've never really thought about it. And he's like, mate, like, I reckon what you do would work over there. I reckon you should go. So I was like, anyway, he kind of pushed forward and said, like, it's up to you, but, you know, do what you want.
Yeah. Is he the guy that does comedy with a bit of rapping and stuff in it?
That's the one, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, cool.
Yeah, he's a big star over in the UK. He's pretty famous in Australia, but he's really famous.
Yeah, one of the first people I ever interviewed in radio was Doc Brown. And then I see that you do some stuff with him, and I was like, oh, I wonder if that's the same guy. You do a radio show with him over there. Like, he's a really big deal, right? Like, is that a really big deal that you do a show with him now?
100%, mate. Yeah, he's really, really, and he's actually just writing and about to co-star in a buddy movie with Ricky Gervais. So he's going to be
sick.
But yeah, so he kind of sparked it for me. And then from that, I got a few sniffs with Edinburgh Fringe and also some radio stuff and a few agents and stuff. And just before I knew it, you know, and you got to watch life when things like this happen, but there'd been about four or five different things within the case, you know, within the point of about 3 or 4 weeks. And I was like, whoa, hang on, that's weird.
Yeah.
When I followed them up, they were all, nothing was like concrete, but it was all enough for me to go, shit, maybe Doc's right. Maybe I should really investigate this. So I spoke to all the bosses, you know, all my bosses at the station and then all the bosses at SGA and my agent, because I was with Profile Talent in Melbourne.
Yeah.
And every single person said, mate, you're crazy if you don't go. Like, if you've got a chance to expand your career, you kind of have to, you know?
Yeah, right. And a year on, how do you... Like, how was there a few weeks at the start when you were like, should have I done the right thing here? Or are you still doing that sometimes? Or was there a point where you're like, nah, this was a good call? Like, where are you sitting sort of a year later?
I am. I still do sometimes think, shit, you know, I guess the crunch for me was I may or may not regret leaving Melbourne at that point in my career, but I'll definitely regret not going to London and trying to make it, you know, over in the UK.
Yeah, for sure.
So I still do fluctuate, but I was lucky that, you know, the sniff that I did have with radio worked. Like, I went into this station, and it's a smaller station, but it's based in London. And so it means that I get to stay in London rather than say work for a massive station and have to go miles out of town and slowly work my way back in.
Yeah.
So I'm really lucky like that. It's a digital station as well. So it's all online and podcasts and stuff like that, but it's quite big over here. So it has a lot of media personalities and sort of, you know, comedians and stuff like that on the station.
Yeah, cool.
But yeah, so that I kind of, I, you know, went and had a meeting with them, and then put together a I roped in Doc Brown to do a show, and then you know that kind of went really well. So it was kind of after 2 months, I was doing a I do a Tuesday drive show with Doc, and then I do a Friday show, afternoon show with a guy called Michael Payne, who's a rapper over here. That's he kind of shot to fame when he did a song with Sheeran. So he's quite popular over here as well.
Yeah, it's probably hard to answer quickly, but please try. Main differences between radio over here and over there? Because I heard Australia is very different to anywhere else.
It is very different. Compared to over here, for starters, there's heaps more stations, of course, as there is heaps more people.
Yeah.
But I mean, a lot of the things that I find weird is that they have a lot of breakfast shows, big breakfast shows that'll be one person. So I was a bit like, that's weird. Is that weird? I think that's weird.
I think that's weird. So, I think that's tough.
It is really tough. Don't you reckon that would be really hard?
Yeah, talking to yourself like a weirdo. Yeah.
One of the big things. The other thing is they've got stations like Kiss FM over here, which is huge, and they just have like everyone on there is like a DJ or a producer or something like that, majority of them. So it's like you'll have an hour show with like a huge DJ doing a big thing, and then the next show will be a huge DJ and da-da-da. So as opposed to, say, we have like the daytime dudes that do 9 to 1 and then 1 to 4 and then the network shows take over.
Yeah.
They've just got like hour after hour after hour of like, you know, huge DJs that are like, you know, international DJs that are like, so it's pretty rad. Like, it's amazing like that as well. They take music very, very seriously over here.
Yeah, because I think it's probably fair to say that the commercial stations in Australia, sure, they got different breakfast talent and different music directors, but like the setup of a lot of the CHR, they're all kind of the same. Whereas it sounds like there you've got lots and lots of choice of music genre and style and all that kind of thing as a listener.
Yeah, they do. And you can see where Australia does definitely, there's obviously formats that commercial radio follows, and you do see that. But I think they're probably here, they're just probably catering for a bigger market, I assume, is probably the thing.
Yeah.
But it's pretty wild. Like the station that I'm on, because it's a digital station, they have a lot more freedom. So, like, I'm even allowed to swear.
Woo!
I find it really hard. Sometimes I slip in a cheeky shit or something like that. It's pretty wild.
I still do that here sometimes.
If only my delay button ever worked.
What effect does having an Australian, start with radio, but then I'd like to know about sort of doing stage, like stand up and bits and pieces as well, but having an Australian accent, because I heard this story once and it might be a bit different because they were in like a small town way, way out of London, like what you were saying before with a big company, and an Aussie got on breakfast and they just weren't accepted by the audience because people were just like, oh, who's this Aussie prick? Nah, and just wouldn't have a bar of it. So is it an advantage? Is it not an advantage? How do you feel about that?
I was really curious about that myself. So even when I had a few people saying to me, reckon you what you do would work over there. Because, you know, I'm a big fan of doing like the little skits and the sketches and all that kind of fun stuff, which I personally really love about radio. So people were like, I reckon that stuff will work over there. I thought the accent would be an issue, but nobody said anything. And then for me, when I go into a market like this, for a situation like this, the smartest thing to do is to attach yourself to people who are already doing it. So even by me, say, doing a show, you know, I went to this radio station through some networks, through an agent, and they just got me a meeting. And they were like, okay, well, you know, your show reel's great, everything's good, pitch your show. So I roped in Doc Brown, and they were like, oh, fuck yeah, do whatever you want.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I was like, cool. I even said, all right, they were like, we just want to start off doing one show a week because it's a specialized station. You know what I mean? A lot of comedians and a lot of talk-based thing.
Yeah.
And I said, Tuesday drive? And they were like, done. I was like, awesome.
Sick. You know
what I mean? I think the thing is because Doc's a big deal over here and there's a few other people that have been supports. So if they essentially, it was done in a way where they brought me in. This is my friend Hugh. People are like, okay, well, it's his friend, so it must be. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, cool. Yeah, that does make sense. How many Aussies are there over there? Do you feel like there's heaps of other Aussies? Like, you hear stories about you go to some bars and it's like, oh, these bloody Australians taking over London. Like, how have you found that?
Everywhere, but it's a bit of a cliche. The English are quite polite. So whenever I go somewhere and I start talking and they go, oh, where's your surfboard, mate? Something like that. I go, oh, you're a racist. And they go, oh, no, sorry. No, that's fine. You're a racist. Well, you think it's not funny. You think it's okay because I'm Australian to make fun of me? I'm a minority here in your country. And people get really upset.
Really?
So ace up the sleeve. But they are Australians are everywhere. It's true. But I mean, the great thing about London is it's so multicultural. There's people from. It's. I mean, if you, for everyone that's ever been here before, it's like you realise how far you removed you are from the rest of the world in Australia, and how London's a real hub. A real hub for a lot of different cultures. It's amazing.
Yeah,
amazing
cool. One of my friends said that London is one of the only places where you can be a full-time stand-up comedian that earns enough money to live comfortably whilst not being that famous, in the sense that there's enough comedy work to go around, whereas in Melbourne, you couldn't make a living off being a comedian unless you were a very well-known comedian. Does that sit right with you, or how do you feel about that?
You can, yeah, you definitely could. But, I mean, the living expenses and stuff over here are a lot different. Like, rent's very expensive. So, say you're paying £150 a week in rent, which is pretty stock standard, something like that, right?
Yep.
So, you could probably earn that in one or two gigs. And then you could, some people live off, you know, say 150. A lot of people working full-time over here, right? Like, my friend works full-time in a bar. She clears about £280 a week. £300 a week.
Far out.
Right? And that's like a lot of people are living off that, mate. It's crazy, right? So like if you can earn that doing 3 or 4 gigs, which is quite feasible,
yeah.
Because there's so many venues here, so many venues. And the UK is really easy to travel. Like Doc just did a national tour and he drove everywhere. Could you imagine doing that in Australia?
Yeah, far out, no way.
I mean, that's definitely feasible for sure.
Yeah, cool. How did you find the Edinburgh Fringe Festival? That is probably... if not top of my list, pretty close to it in terms of like bucket list things to do before I die. What was it like performing there? Is it crazy because there's so many people and it's good to put on a show, or is it hard to, because you know, because there is so many acts, it'd be pretty easy to get lost amongst the crowd, I'm guessing.
100%. And this is the biggest fringe we've ever had as far as shows goes. It was amazing, dude. It was really, 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 I only did 2 weeks. But, you know, and I was in a sort of a smaller band venue, which was great. I think a big thing for that is it's really important to be in the right venue, you know. So I was in like a 30-seater or something like that, which was perfect.
Yeah.
But I really, you know, I had been there before and they put me in like an 80-seater and I was like, yeah, this is crazy. This is not going to work. So that was really, really good. Just being in like a nice band venue, because obviously what I do is musical, like guitar, singer, songwriter stuff.
Yeah.
And it's really good, man. Like, you know, majority of the shows all got a really, really good response. You know, a lot of people as well have to cancel shows up there when they're not a big name. So, you know, I was told that because I didn't have to cancel any shows, that was good as well.
Okay. You know? I'll take a win where I can get it.
Mate, pretty scary. But, you know, I mean, I did have, I had a couple of shows that were full, and then I had a couple of shows that were like 6 or 7 people, and you just got to do it. You know,
yeah.
And then I had one, I only had one bad show, and basically it was all going well for about the first 10 minutes. And then a group of dudes came in up the back and they were at the bar and they were talking really loud and it just distracted everyone.
Yeah.
And then a couple of people were like shuffling seats and there was about 2 or 3 minutes where just everyone was distracted. I was even distracted. You know what I mean?
What do you do in that situation? Like, do you try to rein them in, or what can you do?
Well, I did, and I sort of started changing the show to focus on these guys a bit, and then they were just like, yeah, really loud, and then left. And then it was just like, oh, what the fuck? So anyway, from all of that, I just couldn't get people back on board with what I was doing,
yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, fine.
So it was like 40 minutes of pulling teeth, essentially. But it was fine. It was, you know, most of the shows went really well. And that's a good thing about going, like, it's different if I come to Melbourne and I know a lot of people and I'm going to have support already. But going to Edinburgh, where I was like essentially didn't really know anybody, and to have people come up, Scottish people as well, and go, I really love that. Like, that was wicked. That was like sick. You know, just to know that it can sort of translate in other parts of the world.
Yeah, cool. How do you feel about the life of the stand-up comedian, i.e. doing a month in Edinburgh, doing some Montreal, Melbourne, being on tour essentially 10 months of the year? Is that the kind of thing that you would like to do? Or would you see, for me, I hate living out of a suitcase and I really like radio because, you know, you have a job, you can have a house and you get into your routine, yeah. And blah, blah, blah. So I'm a bit nerdy in that sense. What about you?
Yeah, I like a bit of a balance of both. It's really important for me to have a good homestead and somewhere where I can kind of just you know, get my head back together and get sort of centered again. But I do really love traveling as well, and I do love going away to do gigs. It's really fun. What I'm doing, and I do really love radio. So I guess what I've set up at the moment is that I've got you know, I do gigs on the weekends, whether that's DJing or music and comedy gigs. And then during the week, I do radio and then a bit of TV stuff and random other things that I can get during the week as well.
Yeah.
So when the time comes, I do need to go away for a few gigs. It's just I put everything on hold, and then when I come back, I'm sort of straight into the routine again.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Now,
So I don't think I could never imagine myself just doing one thing, which I think is what kind of because I do need that routine like yourself as well.
yeah.
So I don't want to keep doing it like that for sure.
Tell me about DJing in London, because I think I saw a Facebook post from you the other day that was like, "Oh, I just dropped a 7-hour set." And apparently that's pretty normal. Is that what is that normal over there? And is that not normal in Australia?
Pretty much every Friday night that I'm available, I do a 7-hour set in King's Cross,
Far
which
out.
is like, I mean, there are, I mean, it did start when I put that on Facebook, it did start the conversation with a few people in Melbourne going, "Oh, I've done that," or "I regularly do 5 or 6 hours or something like that." But I just remember that it was quite a few years ago, somebody did a 7-hour set in Melbourne, and it was a talking point for such a long time. People were
Yeah.
like, "Oh, shit, do you remember when Mikey did that 7-hour set?" Fuck that, you know what I
And
mean?
now you're knocking it out each week.
Oh man, it's crazy. And there's so many DJs and clubs over here. Like, there's a really big club here in Shoreditch that they asked me to do a gig from 9 p.m. till 6 a.m. Right?
Yeah.
9 hour set for 60 quid.
Right, is
And
that
I'm like, are you taking the piss, mate? Are you taking the piss?
Yeah,
And
because
they were like,
wouldn't it
"No,
be,
come
wouldn't it
mate, you're
be?
lucky, lucky, lucky to play here. Like, you know, we'll give you a few drinks and 60 quid. Like, that's an awesome deal." I was like, "Yeah, not for fucking 9 hours. It's
I would have thought
not."
$60 for 1 hour would be the absolute minimum in Australia. Is that about right? Like,
Yeah, well, what I would charge in Melbourne was 100 to 150 an hour. Yeah.
yeah, far
And then
out.
over here, it's, you know, like, it's very, very different. It's
Is that
very
because
different.
you got to kind of start again and earn your place or whatever? Or there's just, like you said, there's so many DJs and so many clubs that it's just, that's just the biz and that's what it is.
It's a bit of both, to be honest with you. I mean, you do kind of like, you know, it's only been, I've been DJing here for 10 months now, and you kind of just got to, you know, you got to earn your spot. But, you know, I get to do some fun gigs and some good stuff. So I'm really not complaining. I just do find it curious. Every now and then I'm like, "Shit, I literally just played for 7 hours."
Yeah,
Just
how
fucked up.
tight and like technical involved is your set? Because I'm guessing if you got brought on to do 45 minutes, you'd be like, "All right, I'm gonna make this the best 45 minutes. I'm gonna do this. I'm gonna mash into that and whatever." But for 7 hours, you're just like, "Fucking hell!" Like you just start playing music and see what happens. Like.
I'm really, not surprisingly, I've really gotten into a lot of funk and new funk and stuff that goes for like 7 or 8 minutes.
Yeah.
another toilet break. Yeah, my little quick sleep. Yeah, no, it's pretty fun. Actually, it's weird. It's just a matter of getting into the swing of it, really. So I can kind of knock out 5 hours now without even thinking about it, which is still pretty wild in my books.
Yeah, that's crazy. All right, I've got a couple more questions, and we've sort of touched on this a few times, but I'm always curious to know with people that do sort of multiple things, is that what is the perfect, not to choose one of the stuff that you do over the other, but like the perfect, say, scenario? And you were sort of saying before that you like a mix of routine and then traveling and stuff, but like if you were to get a full-time radio job and that meant you couldn't do as much DJing, or if you got bigger DJ gigs and you couldn't do as much, right? Like, what would be the perfect setup for you in a perfect world?
Definitely, man. Well, that's literally what I'm here and I'm aiming for, and I've kind of got to some extent, but I just need to make it all bigger and better. But I'm working on a single at the moment for a song of mine called "Wambulance." So I've nearly finished recording that. And then what I basically want to do is I want to have the instead of doing sort of more sort of stand-up stuff, I want to do more of a band thing, which is what I have historically done
Yep.
anyway. So which is a bit more kind of on the Tenacious D kind of tip, I guess,
Yeah,
if
cool.
anything. Or Flight of the Conchords-y sort of stuff. But yeah, I want to have that band record and release music. So I really want to be, you know, have it as more of a recording artist than a sort of a stand-up sort of situation.
Yep.
Tour that, have a radio show. Because radio really is like my dream. Like, you know, the musical comedy stuff is like my biggest passion, but radio is like my dream job. You know
Yep.
what I mean? So I don't ever want to step away from that. But I want to be able to, it'd be great to, when I am traveling or doing things, if I could keep podcasting my show or keep doing it pre-recorded or something like
Yeah,
that, you know what
yeah.
I mean? Because I want to keep doing it. And then the DJ gigs, yeah, I'd prefer to just do more selective, you know, bigger funny gigs rather than residencies and stuff like that. But I'm doing the residencies now just to make sure that because it pays quite well. So it's just so I've got a good regular income stream coming in from that area, you know what I mean?
Yeah, cool. All right. And so
I want to keep on, keep doing the recording and releasing music and tour that where I can. Do more selected DJ gigs, and then the TV stuff I'm just growing because I want that to be a regular part of the week. I want the week to be TV, radio, and then the weekends or whatever is doing some shows and stuff like that.
Yeah. Now you've got, I think you said earlier that, or maybe that was off air, but you do have a bit of family over there. Does that mean that you have a passport and you can stay for as long as you can, or have you only got the 2 years to do what you can and then come home? Like, what's the plan?
Baby, I was born here.
Yeah, so you can stay and do whatever you want.
I am certified UKerian. Actually, I was born in Wales. So I am referred to as a Welsh Australian over here, which is apparently a bit like a unicorn. Very rare.
Is right? did you set yourself a time? Did you sort of say to yourself, oh, I'll go for 2 years and see how I go? Or you just go on day by day? You seem to be having a good time. Like, have you thought much ahead about what you're going to do? Or it depends how your current projects pan out?
It is tough, I think, because I do really miss Australia. I really do. I even really miss my old job. I really love the lifestyle that I had set up for myself there, you know. But I kind of in my mind, I said I'd give it a year and just see, try to gauge what's going on from there.
And that was about 13, 14 months ago now, right?
I know, man. It's crazy. But like things just sort of they got set up so quick. That even now I feel like I'm only just now, I feel I'm at the top of setting up the foundation of the lifestyle I wanted. And now I need to take that to the next level to bigger and better things. You know what I mean? So I feel like I kind of can't leave. I feel like I'd be really stupid if I left now. So I've
you've done your groundwork.
No immediate plans to come back. And as long as things are going well, progressing, I just want to, I mean, ultimately what I want to do now is I want to get, you know, I want to at some point soon move on to a bigger and better station. I want to be able to get my music properly released. I want to be able to get, more regular, better TV jobs. So that's kind of, I feel like I'm at the top of the small pile in my mind.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Of where I could be as far as all the work things are going, which is great. I feel really, really lucky about that. And now I'm just kind of focusing on, okay, how do I take that step up to the bottom of the bigger pile?
Yeah, cool. And all right, final question. What would you tell 18-year-old Hugh, advice for the future? Because I know with our biz, like the stuff, like, you know, early adopters always get ahead. And I always think, oh, I wonder if I started doing YouTube videos 5 years ago or sort of stuff like that. Is there anything that you in particular would advise a younger yourself to get better at or to start doing earlier?
My biggest advice for an 18-year-old would be, I was just running in the park before and I saw a little girl. She was screaming at her mum, "Mom, we're going to be late. We're going to be late. We're going to be late." And mum's like, "No, we're not going to be late." She's screaming her head off, "Mom, we're going to be late." And then the mum was like, "Look, we're half an hour early for a play date. All right, we're going to get a little ice cream and stuff." And the kid was like, "No." And then she pointed at this sign because I saw this whole kerfuffle going on. And the little kid was like, "What's a kiosk?" And I was like, "You stupid idiot. You don't even know what a kiosk is." My advice for 18-year-olds is wear a fucking condom. Really... No. I don't know, man. I reckon just try lots of different stuff. I reckon that's the best thing.
To yourself, your 18-year-old self specifically.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, there's a part of me that kind of feels like I wished I got into things a bit earlier with radio and all of that.
Yeah.
But you've got to respect the process. And I just feel like, it's kind of, I'm here now doing stuff. So I kind of just go, okay, well, let's build a good foundation, I guess. But I guess I would just try lots of things and just, and don't be afraid to ask people for help because a lot of people are willing to help, you know what I mean? So if you just say, "I'm really interested in this, what would you recommend?" Find a mentor and do lots of crazy YouTube videos or do lots of crazy stuff. And I would just say keep active, just keep doing things. And then you might start doing a YouTube thing and, having fun with that. And then that might then lead to somebody going, "Oh, hey, why don't you come onto my radio show?" And before you know it, you're not even doing YouTube stuff. Now you're just doing radio. And that might lead to somebody going, "Oh, you should do your radio thing on this TV thing." So you never know where it's going to lead. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure.
As long as you're doing stuff, it'll lead somewhere.
Yeah,
it'll
cool.
Always lead somewhere.
Well, like we've said a few times, it's been about 13 or 14 months since you moved over to the UK. It's fascinating to hear that it feels really quick for you because it looks like it's all happened pretty quick from afar. It looks like you're having a lot of fun. It'd be fascinating to do this podcast again in another 12 months and see where you're up to there. So, Hugh, thanks so much for joining us, mate. Congratulations on everything that's happened over in the UK so far, and all the best for what's coming up next.
Oh, love you, Mr. John. I love you. I love you. I love you.